Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, DJ Foster. I am joined tonight by Jordan Heimer, coming to us live from Staples Center. Jordan, what a game.
What a game, DJ. Disappointing ending, obviously, but I'd say definitely the most exciting game of the year so far, win or lose. And a throwback to Grit and Grind Grizzlies and a great rivalry that I thought we may have seen the end of. But this was really a throwback Clipper-Grizzly game.
It really felt like a throwback game, too, especially with Jamal getting hot. That just felt like a very Clippers-Grizzlies thing. Jamal going on his little run. Man, and just trading shots down towards the end there. I felt like there were so many times during this game where the momentum was just ready to swing. Where, like, the fans were just so antsy for it. And they were like a big steal and just a layup rims out or a shot rims out. Did you kind of get that feeling being at Staples Center that everyone was kind of ready to erupt and the momentum was kind of ready to shift, but it just never quite got there?
Well, in terms of the crowd erupting, it did get there. I mean, it didn't get there in the end, but the seven JJ threes in the second half, particularly the one to tie it, and the Jamal offensive rebound that cut it to two, I think 105-103. That was literally Jamal Crawford's second offensive rebound of the year.
Of his career, yeah.
Just of the young season, but yeah, basically the second of his career. And, you know, the team was into it. After those big baskets, they were pumping up the crowd and waving their arms. And DJ was jumping all over the place. And it just kind of fell apart in those last few possessions. Obviously, that Jamal turnover was critical.
Yeah, that was a tough one. It was almost like it's hard to get too mad at Jamal there because I'm not sure the Clippers are in striking distance without him down the stretch. But that was a pretty brutal turnover at a tough time.
Right, like you have to give them credit for being there to begin with. You know, I was struck during the second half. It's really difficult to come back from 16 points.
Yeah.
Because when you're down 16, it means even when you're out playing, you know, the Grizzlies, every time they go on a 4-0 run, it's back to 12, it's back to 8, it's back to 10. You just have to play almost perfectly to come back from that kind of deficit against a good team.
And that last play, they draw it up for JJ Redick, who's hit 7 threes on the night. It looks like he's going to get a pretty good look at it. Any complaints with that last play being drawn up the way it was?
No, not particularly. I will say he had hit 7 threes, but very few of them in the way in which that play had him getting the ball.
Mm.
You know, so in that play, he had the ball for a bounce coming around the screen, and he kind of lost it as he got into the lane.
Right.
Most of his threes in the second half were feet planted, spot up threes.
Right.
No problem with that. Like, not to sound like a coach, but they didn't lose it there. I mean, that was not the play where I said, well, that's where they lost the game.
Right.
By the way, lots of credit to Coach Fizdale for the Grizz. I love the way he coached this game. Like, it's very rare in a regular season NBA game that I'm struck by things people are doing coaching-wise. But there were so many little tinkerings that he did to keep them in this game in the second half that I thought were really smart and impressive.
Right. No Chandler Parsons in the second half. He's working with an interesting group. I mean, Aaron Harrison is playing 26 minutes. Vince Carter, 27 minutes. I mean, he's kind of just kind of squeezing as much as he can out of this group. But I think ultimately it came down to Marc Gasol and Mike Conley just being unreal tonight. That pick and roll was unstoppable.
They were unreal, and one of those little wrinkles that Fizdale used that I thought was very clever was he used both of them, you know, traditionally, right? You use your starters in two chunks per half. They play the first 8 minutes, then they play the last 8 minutes. And he chunked it out so that they each played six segments during the game. And they started, so they would play 6 or 7 minutes in the first quarter, and then he brought both of them together back on to start the second and fourth quarter. And they did a great job with that, kind of overwhelming that Clippers second unit, which has looked pretty good defensively so far this year. But against basically the classic three Grizzlies, those two guys and Zebo, they were really overmatched. And those were really critical times in the game where the Clippers had trouble securing a lead.
There was a little piece of you that kind of enjoyed watching the Grizzlies be at their best, wasn't there?
Oh, there's no question. And I think it's for two reasons. One, as a Clipper fan, this is maybe the first year I've ever watched the team, and they're so clearly good, and they're so clearly going to be contenders, that you can shrug off a loss like this.
Yeah.
Like, to a certain extent, it's like, yeah, they lost, they're going to be fine. The other thing is just, it was a reminder of how much fun those three playoff series were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a shame to see, in some ways, the most Bates Defensive Player of the Year campaign go up in smoke. Yeah, this was the first night we really saw the other side of Mo. Zach Randolph was just torching him to a point where he basically couldn't stay on the floor in the second half.
You remember, most Bates was on the other side of the Clippers-Grizzlies rivalry for a little bit there.
Of course, and I think back in the Clipper Blog Live days, we all called for Mo Spates as a free agent before he eventually signed with the Warriors.
We did.
We loved Mo Spates.
We did indeed, yep.
But yeah, it was kind of fun. Although it's one of those things, you know, I don't get a chance to watch the Grizzlies that often. When you watch them against the Clippers, it's hard to understand how they're like a middling team. They still seem so good to me.
Yeah.
Gasol and Conley are so good. And Vince Carter looks better than he has since he was playing in Dallas 4 or 5 years ago. Again, one of those really nice wrinkles was I thought Fizdale did a nice job punishing Doc Rivers for playing the three-guard lineup down the stretch. And like you said, you can't complain because JJ and Jamal are keeping the Clippers in the game.
Sure.
But he brought Vince Carter back in and just went straight at Jamal, who's your small forward, right? With Vince Carter, who's like, you know, 40, 50 pounds bigger than him.
Right.
Anyway, it was just a really interesting game. It really was kind of a chess match, and each team was hoping that their relative advantage would outweigh the others.
I will say this. I think this was about as good as the Grizzlies can play. I think this is pretty close to their ceiling. I mean, Gasol and Conley combined were 11 for 14 from three-point land.
Yeah, look. I think the Clippers do bring out the best in the Grizzlies. It was really clear that this game meant a lot to both teams.
Yeah.
There was a passion and a between timeout intensity that you just don't see during regular season games, even close, intense regular season games like the one against OKC. And it was getting chippy, and Blake was heated and barking at refs, and Chris was heated, and Jamal got a tech that was pretty costly, actually, in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, it wasn't just kind of arbitrary that the Grizzlies were playing so well. This is a new Grizzly team, and the Clippers were defending them in an old Grizzly way, which is to say it took a solid 2.5 quarters for the Clippers to kind of make the adjustment to be fighting through screens rather than sitting back on the Gasol screens or the Vince Carter screens when those guys were the ball handlers, or excuse me, the poppers. Because those guys were wide open for a lot of those threes.
Yeah, Gasol has been great all year as a three-point threat. And kind of just to piggyback off of what you're saying, it's really fun to see how even the players in this rivalry have kind of evolved over time. Marc Gasol is like a legitimate stretch five three-point shooter now. Whereas before, yeah, he had a great little 18, 17, 18 footer, but like he's the one providing the spacing for this offense now, essentially.
Absolutely. And you saw tonight why assuming that Zebo's okay with it locker room-wise, Zach Randolph can be such a force coming off the bench for the last 3 or 4 years of his career if he decides that this is a role he wants to embrace. Because we did see the flip side of the bench tonight. You know, I actually think they missed Wes a little bit tonight, because when you had Brandon Bass and Mo Spates out there against Gasol and Zebo, they're just too slow and too groundbound. And you kind of had Gasol was too quick for them, and Zebo was too big for Mo Spates and too fast and put the ball on the floor. And it was tough to play those guys tonight.
This is kind of a weird question. Do you think this is a good loss? Do you think it takes kind of some of the heat off of the Clippers? Because they've been getting a lot of momentum, a lot of attention. You know, number one in power rankings everywhere and a lot of media attention. Do you think this is kind of maybe will slow down the hype a little bit and let them just kind of quietly be dominant again?
You know, not really. I know that's a leading question and the answer is supposed to be yes.
No.
But I think
narratives are dumb.
Yeah, I think maybe if it had been just a beatdown from start to finish, you could say, hey, that's like a humility check. And that's, you know, one of these games that makes you realize you can't just roll the ball out there, Vinny Del Negro style, and win every night. You know, it has to be dominant talent plus, you know, full effort. But the fact that they came back and came so close and really was a few costume mistakes down the end, I think that's got to be frustrating.
So many shots just rimmed out too. I know that's like the most like basic level analysis, like it's a make or miss league, but God, so many layups down the stretch were just barely rimming out. Blake, Chris, I mean everybody.
Yeah, I mean, again, I watched the game tonight from those upper level press boxes, which really lets you get that God's eye view where you can kind of see the whole chess match, and Chris was missing his shot all night.
Yeah.
You know, he was getting that free throw line extended jumper.
That's really hard to say, to be fair.
That is hard to say. Free throw line extended. And he just couldn't make it. And Blake was missing some bunnies that he usually makes. Obviously, that's counterbalanced by the fact that J.J. Redick hit, what, 8 threes?
Yeah.
Like 7 in the second half. But yeah, they were missing shots they usually make, and frankly, Memphis was making shots that you can't say they usually miss, but as X goes to infinity, Mike Conley is not an 85% shooter from beyond the arc.
Is that a math term? I was told there would be no math.
Sorry, reversion to the mean.
Oh boy.
If you will.
That's even tougher for me. Jordan.
Yeah, what is the mean?
Yeah, who even knows? So ultimately, in this game, Memphis, are we seeing them as a playoff team? Could we see this Clippers-Grizzlies matchup in the postseason, you think?
I think actually, I wouldn't say likely, but as a 2-7 matchup, that seems like exactly where I feel like Memphis is going to finish. Now, I don't know why Chandler Parsons didn't play in that second half. And if he is in and out all year and ends up playing 20 or 30 games, I think they're in trouble. But I don't know about you, I'm impressed by some of these young role players they develop. They remind me a little bit of the way that if you watch a lot of Raptors basketball, Toronto has this secret, like, young 5 or 6 guys that you don't think about because they don't play a lot of minutes.
Right.
But they're back there, you know, Norman Powell. And
Corey Joseph, those kind of guys.
Yeah, and Terrence Ross. And is it No Sierra?
Yep, the long, athletic, defensive players, basically.
And the Grizz also very quietly have assembled some young pieces for the first time really in this entire grit and grind run, where you can see the makings of some interesting players moving forward. I really liked Andrew Harrison tonight. He's much bigger than I realized.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
He's like 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", and he's got a lot of length, and he looks like he knows what he's doing out there.
It's a good point you make. It's really hard. Memphis never really plays anyone that can't defend, it feels like. You know what I mean? There's never anyone out there for Memphis, for their wings or guards or their bench, that you're like, oh man, that guy's a liability. They just don't have those kind of guys.
Yeah, and having a bunch of kind of switchable defensive wing guys is something that they've never had.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they had Matt Barnes last year, but, you know, we're on the backside of the Matt Barnes experience at this point. I don't know. Again, this probably is as good as they could play, but watching them tonight felt like a page out of the old rivalry, and it's, like, hard to understand how this team right now is just kind of swimming around 500. They look good tonight.
Yeah, they did. Another question for you. Do you need to take some Advil? Do you have a headache? Was the Thunderstick experience as bad as it's always been?
Oh, my God. It is a crime against humanity. I mean, the Thundersticks, they should not be given out in any sports game, but they were given to everybody tonight. And I was sitting, like I said, in the rafters of Staples Center, and it's against the rules for press people to chide fans. That's, like, frowned upon. And I don't want to lose my press pass. But I wanted to try to explain to the fans in the upper 300 levels, like, you're not distracting the free throw shooters. Like, all you're doing is giving me, Jordan Hymer, a headache.
Right. You're not like the 12th man in Seattle.
Yeah, like, I get it. It's a cool visual if you're behind the basket and you're in the 115, 116 section. Like, yeah, Thunder, stick your little heart out. But you're just killing me up here in the 300s, and they're getting in my field of vision, and they're waving all over the place. And as a footnote, since I'm going off on the fans, which is always really attractive.
Sure.
I think, like, another message I would have to the fans is, guys, free t-shirts are, like, the most dispensable, cheapest thing in the world. Like, I cannot imagine how much you want these free t-shirts. But
ooh, you lost me.
Oh, you like free t-shirts?
I mean, everyone likes free t-shirts, Jordan. You get a t-shirt, and you can wear that for... I have t-shirts from, like, 15 years ago that I still wear and love.
Let me put a concrete image to this complaint. The people who are giving out these t-shirts, the Clipper employees, the Staples Center workers, they're kids. They're, like, 17, 18, 19 years old. I assume this is a low-paying job. You're surrounded by screaming fans. You're wandering through the aisles looking for who to throw the t-shirt to. And they're getting harassed, you know, like they're a taxi cab driver who's about to mow someone down in New York City. You know, there was a dad right in front of me who kept screaming at this, like, 17-year-old girl, my son's got a broken arm, for God's sake. Throw him a t-shirt.
Oh, that will... Yeah, that's...
Just buy your kid a t-shirt.
That's, like, that's a little much.
She didn't break his arm. Anyway.
She might have.
She might have.
That's a little much, I gotta say.
The game was great, but the game operations experience, I feel, at Staples Center could use an upgrade.
Are they shooting them out of cannons still?
Not in the upper deck. They now have, like, private one-person-per-section, like, employees who just kind of soft-toss.
Oh, I don't like that. It's gotta come from a cannon.
Right. There's got to be the potential that it could, like, take an eye out if you're not watching.
I will say that free t-shirts, you have to have a good story behind the free t-shirts. What do you have a favorite free t-shirt?
I don't know if this counts, but it's got holes in it.
Yeah.
But I still have a t-shirt that is wearable from when I was 13 and went to Adam Osterweil's bar mitzvah. And he had
Of course this is your t-shirt story.
There was a man at the bar mitzvah who did that thing that you could also get done at Six Flags where they, like, use the
circumcision? No, not circumcision.
No, they were not giving out bristles at the bar mitzvah. Okay, we were all 13 years past that horrific moment. No, there was, like, a guy who I think was called airbrushing, right? You airbrush something like a... You know, like a cartoon of your face onto a t-shirt? Anyway, I had him airbrush me a t-shirt that said, Pearl Jam Rules.
Yes.
I still wear my Pearl Jam Rules t-shirt occasionally.
Oh, and you've had it your whole life.
Yeah, I've had that shirt literally 20 years.
That's fantastic. You need to wear that the next time we hang out.
Done.
I don't care how gross it is, how many holes are in it. You've got to rock that thing. My favorite...
If that's all it takes to make you happy, DJ.
That's literally all it takes. My favorite free t-shirt that I got... I was living in Spokane, Washington at the time. there was a little dive bar next to my apartment. I mean, like, a really gross, like, guys chewing tobacco and spitting on the floor, like, just a really, like, gross bar. So imagine the diviest dive bar and put it in the middle of Spokane, Washington, and that was this bar. But this bar used to have goldfish races. I don't know if
you want to explain that.
I don't know if you're familiar with goldfish races, but they basically just like fill up a tub of water and make these little lanes with cardboard dividers, and they give you a squirt gun, and you squirt the water behind the goldfish to make him race to the end of the tub. And if your goldfish beats everybody else's goldfish, you get a prize. So, needless to say, as a 22-year-old kid with a bar literally right next to the apartment, I decided to partake in a goldfish race. And I got a t-shirt with some bear on it for some Montana beer that I've never had in my life. And it's a prized treasure of mine.
Did you get that t-shirt because your goldfish won the race?
My goldfish, not only did my goldfish win the race, my goldfish dominated to the point where I felt like I needed to go out on top and never race goldfish again. Plus, I also felt a little guilty because I don't know if like the goldfish likes getting water sprayed on it. I'd imagine probably not. So I thought there was some like animal cruelty issues, perhaps.
And they're fish. It's their natural medium through which they move and breathe, and they have gills. Like, if you blew in my ear,
yeah,
air, which I breathe, I have no problem with that.
No, that's not accurate. If someone was just standing behind you, blowing in your ear to make you run faster.
Look, you're right. After a while, it might get annoying, depending on who it was doing the blowing in my ear and how intimate we were. But I wouldn't think it was, like, a violation of my human rights.
I don't know. I think it might have been a violation of these fish's rights. It just didn't feel right. Look, Jordan, you can't judge me. You don't really know until you're in it, until you're in the goldfish race, and you're with a bunch of drunk, just random dirty people racing these goldfish.
I'm basically imagining like stock footage of rooster fighting in like Mexico, only with goldfish in Spokane.
Yes, no, that's 100% accurate. If you're ever in Spokane, hit up Litz's Bar in Spokane. You'll probably regret it.
But there might be a t-shirt in it for me.
Yeah, that's true. It's a great t-shirt. High quality. Let's get to some Twitter questions here. Are you up for that?
I'm up for that.
All right, let's start here. Let's see. Why do the Clippers complain? Is it injustice, a history of losing, or is it entitlement? They have the stars and the talent. I'm going to let you guess who asked this question.
Is it Nick?
It's Whammy.
Oh, Whammy.
It's a Whammy. It's a Whammy question.
He's back.
Why do the Clippers complain?
If we're just using tonight as the example, I would challenge the premise. I didn't think the Clippers were complaining any more than the Grizzlies were, and I thought there were some calls down the stretch that they had every right to be upset by.
I would say...
That's my whole answer.
I know, I like it. I would say that a lot of times teams will kind of take on the personality of their coach in certain ways. And Doc rides the refs so much that I think it's only natural that his players also do. And Chris has always been a guy who, even before in New Orleans, who really gets on the refs and works the refs nonstop. So I can kind of see how everyone grew into that. Their leader on the court does it. Their leader on the sideline does it. So guys like DeAndre and Blake kind of adapted that personality. Does that make any sense?
I think that makes sense. I think that's fair. Doc certainly never stops working the refs. But I do think it's also fair to note that we've seen less of it this year. Maybe it's still too frequent, but it's down from previous seasons.
Yep. They did say, Chris did say on, I think it was on JJ Redick's podcast, in the offseason, that they were going to complain about the refs less. That they were going to let the refs kind of do their thing and complain less. How's that working out for everybody?
Look, I honestly think it's working out fine. They were coming from a bad baseline. I mean, they were the worst in the league at this. So even if they're still moderate complainers, that can also be an improvement.
Yeah, that's fair. I got helicopters coming for me outside, so that's fun. Why do you think the Clippers came out so lackadaisical in the first half? I actually missed the first half. I was playing rec league basketball with guys who were throwing alley-oops and a 6'9 center, and it was just, it was as bad as you could imagine me playing in that game. So why do you think the Clippers came out so lackadaisical in the first half?
Well, look, this is so subjective, but it looked like to me that they weren't quite ready to play a grit and grind game. You know, the Grizzlies came out and they were the Grizzlies. They were throwing, you know, the picks were tough and you had to fight through them. And it wasn't going to be easy and it wasn't going to be fun. And I just think it took a half for the Clippers to realize that was the kind of game they were in for tonight.
Yeah.
And I think once they did, you know, almost that feeling when you play a game of pickup of like, some nights you don't have a good sweat going and everything feels like it hurts more. And just nothing feels kind of smooth and adrenalized. It felt like the Clippers were going through one of those nights until they got their good sweat going in the second half.
Part of me thinks that this was bound to happen, like, relatively soon, with the way they've been blowing out teams and putting games away so early. I think teams, I don't think it's like a conscious thing, but I think some teams are like, when they get on these big blowout streaks, they almost want to see how they can play once they're down. I'm not saying that the Clippers purposely got down early and were missing shots on purpose, but I do think at some point when you've been blowing out teams that it takes one of these games where you get down early to really test yourself and say, okay, let's see if we can come back. And the Clippers almost did.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And certainly I thought it was pretty cool to see the way that the second unit, which was absolutely torched in the first half, made a real concerted effort to play their best defense in the second half. Now, that still is going to have some liabilities, but those guys were working much harder in the second half trying to get through screens and stay, you know, run out of three-point shooters, and they did a nice job.
If I'm not mistaken, they played even ball in the fourth quarter, which is just about all you can ask for.
Especially when Fizdale was throwing most of his first unit at those guys.
Right, exactly. I asked my Twitter followers for their best free t-shirt stories, and apparently we are the only two people with free t-shirt stories. One person answered, at Anthony Zell, he said, "One time at a game, some guy handed me a free t-shirt. Hashtag Clipper Nation."
Anthony needs to work on his narrative storytelling.
But it works. The free t-shirt works. He remembers this. He's going to remember that his whole life, Jordan.
Hey, look, if it made his night, then I'm happy for him. But as a story, like, if he's thinking about working that into some kind of toast at a wedding, that's going to take more work.
You're going to have to leave that out. All right, that's fair. Jordan, anything you want to say, get off your chest here before we get out?
I think I'm pretty much set, DJ.
All right, great. New Clippers podcast coming soon?
We're recording tomorrow, episode 4, so everybody should subscribe to that on iTunes and look for it tomorrow afternoon.
Dan Wojcicki, Zach Harper, who's going this week?
I'm not sure if we're doing the full four-man booth,
but
we may be for the first time. It may be the quartet, the Fab Four.
Ooh, that's going to be good. All right, so everybody look out for that. It's the Clippers podcast. You can subscribe to it on iTunes. Thank you guys for subscribing to this podcast, Locked On Clippers Podcast. Make sure you rate and review us as well. For Jordan Heimer, I'm DJ Foster. Thanks for listening to the Locked On Clippers Podcast. Enjoy your day.